This is the Business of Apps podcast, bringing you actionable insights from the leaders of the global app industry and the world's fastest growing apps. You can find more app news, data and analysis over at businessofapps.com.
Welcome to the Business of Apps podcast. On this show, we invite app industry professionals to cover various topics, and we promise to do our best to keep it both insightful but brief. If you haven't subscribed to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or other podcast platforms where you can find us, I strongly encourage you to do that. Once you subscribe, you will be getting this show on your device as soon as it's available. In this episode, we have Leah Samrani, Product and Growth Consultant. Leah, welcome to the Business of Us podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great, thank you for coming. All right. Before anything else, I always set up the stage, and here we go. So today, of all business models, the subscription model is the one that rules the world of mobile apps. Long gone the times when you hear the word subscription in a conversation about mobile apps, and you can only think of apps for content streaming or online media. Today, subscription apps are everywhere. In this episode, Leah will share the best practice for subscription apps monetization. She will cover things like product market fit, language market fit, framing the prices, and more. Leah, before tackling our today's topic, please tell us about yourself.
So my name is Leah. I've been in the product sphere for over a decade now. I've worked across marketplace and SaaS businesses, but the vast majority of my experience is on subscription app. And the last few years, I spent a lot of time optimizing for monetization. So there's a few learning that came along the way that I'm happy to share with you today.
Yeah, this is great. This is a great experience to share. Okay. In this episode, we're going to cover some of the topics that Leah brought in her presentation at the APS Berlin last November. And so let's begin with addressing this basic question, which is, what is app monetization and what benefits it brings to app developers?
Right. There's something like 250 billion app downloads right now. So app monetization is obviously very important. When you launch an app, like any product, you need a viable monetization model for multiple reasons. One, so you can grow, so you can, you know, sustain your business, hire people, etc. Secondly, because there isn't retention with monetization on at least on a subscription app. If you can prove from very, very early day that people are willing to pay for your product and you understand why they're willing to pay, not only you get a sustainable business model that allows you to grow, but you also understand the real value of your product. And so you can also focus on delivering the, you know, the best, most valuable product for your end users. So those two things really come hand in hand.
All right. So now the first topic from the presentation to bring is product market fit. So how do we achieve the product market fit for a mobile app?
There are many ways to achieve product market fit, and there's many ways to measure it. But there's three things that you need. One of them is a decent product. So, you know, your product is not buggy, it's stable, it works. The second one is value. Your product needs to bring an added value, an experience that provides something to your end users. So that means understanding, you know, your people, understanding what they need, and provide some sort of version of that on your app. And the third one is the audience product fit. So, you know, it's not enough to have an amazing idea and an amazing product. You also need enough people that think this is a great idea and a great product. So you need enough of a market as well for it to work. So those are the three things that I think are very, like, minimal, at least, that you really need to start getting some level of product market fit and start building traction. And then there's how you measure that, which is some decent activation and engagement metric, you know, around activation, maybe retention. And if your product have some sort of habituation into it, you can also look at things like stickiness. And that's how you define if you're in a place where product market fit is good enough, let's say, to start really focusing on monetization.
Right. So actually, product market fit is the notion in marketing that is applicable to any product or service on the market. It's way broader as you might think. The notion originated before mobile apps, obviously. But in our case, for subscription apps, it's really important because we're building the app business that will be growing on the monthly payments for our subscribers base. And if we have the right audience, which is the result of product market fit, we're good to go. We are providing the product to people who really need it, and they're going to stick to our base. And so next up on your list was this interesting tidbit. This is language market fit. And I'm going to just clarify here really quickly. We don't mean using a specific language, let's say approaching people in Spain or Mexico in Spanish instead of English language. We're talking about using specific vocabulary and the way we talk to these app users. So what listeners need to know about it, and how does it influence the subscription app monetization?
We're talking subscription. You want to optimize your subscription, you need to know how to sell. And you cannot sell something without having the right word to talk about it. And this is where language market fit is quite important. I see a lot of apps that talks about, you know, features, functionalities. They have this long list of things that they do. Sometimes those words are technical, internal word. I've even recently seen app that that say our users or they use words that are very technical that people don't necessarily understand. This is not language market fit. This is you telling to the world what you think you're offering to the world. Language market fit is the opposite of that, is understanding what the world wants in their own word, and then be able to use that language throughout your, you know, your app, your app stores, your onboarding funnel, your paywalls, or your CRM flow, so you optimize for subscription. And I've seen over time a paywall conversion rate radically change just by changing the words on it. Not changing the product, not changing what you're actually offering to people, just changing how you talk about it, the conversion rate was radically different.
You know, there's actually a really interesting example that stuck in my mind for whatever reason that I've heard years and years ago. Boy, like 20 years ago, there was this equation. On one side, you have features, on the other, benefits. So think about how Microsoft used to sell products, or any company that has been selling PCs. You have a bunch of features, how many cores, how many RAM, what is the number of colors, say, in the monitor. And there is the opposite side of the equation, benefits. Think about what you can read on Apple's product page. You don't see, you may see some numbers that are referring to the specs, but for the most part, it's about benefits. It's like, I don't know, this vacuum cleaner has so many power, so many watts of power. It's not interesting for anybody. And people want to know how clean will be my room if I'm using this product. This simple difference between features and benefits applies to anything. And of course, it applies to apps. And if you can remember it, if you can try to walk in the shoes of your customers, what will make me to use this app if I'm going to be reading a description? What will trigger, what will resonate with me, right?
Yeah, one of the best example of that, I think, are all those fitness app or the fitness app. You know, they're not telling you we have, I don't know, 500 videos that will help you do push-ups. They don't. Yes. They say you're going to lose weight, you're going to build muscle, or you're going to be healthier. This is what they're saying, and it's really based on what you want. I want to be healthier. I don't want to do push-ups. I may have to do push-ups to get healthier. But if you're saying me push-up, I'm probably not going to buy it. If you're saying me health, I will buy it and then, you know, go on and do the push-ups.
That's a great example. Yeah, you're using the language that will entice, encourage people, not put them down. Oh boy, I need to make this hard work. I know I don't need this app. I changed my mind. Moving along to the next point from your presentation, which was about framing the prices. Leo, what is your strategy when it comes to presenting the app's pricing to its audience?
This is so important. The way you frame your prices will give a perception of your product being too expensive or too cheap or worth it or not. Some of the things that I've seen working really well is having at least two, maybe three products on the same paywall. So you can really anchor your price with something a bit higher maybe or something a bit cheaper, where suddenly the best option seems to be the better option. You can also do that with discount or length, so the duration of your subscription. Some app like Spotify, I think they do that with a family pack. So it's one account, two account, five accounts, and that's how the prices is framed. And that's actually really important because people are coming to a product that they don't really know. They don't know you yet. They don't know what it's worth. So it's up to you to set a standard as what your product is worth. And the best way to do that is give them something to compare it to. So having multiple subscription on offer on the same paywall is one way you can do that.
Right. I can think of like the most popular example that floats in my mind when I think of a subscription, three options where the pricing is presented the way that it makes sense for you to go for the highest price bid. If you compare the middle one and the highest one always wins because you can see that you're paying a little bit extra, but you're getting a lot more of value. I don't know, things like Dropbox was on this from this equation. If you need, for example, check out the any subscription app existing on the market, it may not be directly relevant to your product, but the pricing structure, it's about psychology, perception of pricing. Like you're saying, people have no idea about your product. They haven't started using the product. So you're telling them the value of your product by the pricing. So this is a very important moment for you. And we're kind of unnaturally coming to the next point, which is building trust. I know it may sound familiar, but it's just so paramount to build trust between you and your customer. So what can you share with us, Lee, about building a trust?
In a way before subscription app, one of the best way to get new customer was a referral. It was word of mouth. You trust a lot more when a brand or a product, when it's endorsed by someone you trust. The exact same principle apply to subscription app. The best way to build trust is word of mouth and referral. And we can't necessarily do that directly. You know, we can't necessarily tell to our people, recommend our product to other people. We can in some way, but that's not the point here. However, we can take all the credential we have, all the social proof we have, and make sure that it's very visible, that it's surfaced throughout the experience. Again, I'm a new person. I come to your app. I don't know who you are. I don't know the brand. I don't know the product. I don't know the team. I have no idea if I can trust this product or not. But if I start seeing something like, you know, 1 million users, 4.8 star rating, app of the day, voted favorite app by blah, 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 whoever, you know, or third party as well, like Trustpilot, etc. If I start seeing quotes that actually, you know, maybe someone that is in my location that is using the same product or the same functionality as I'm using, I may start having a bit more trust towards a product. And you need both quantity and quality. I don't know about you, but if I book a hotel or, you know, Airbnb and there's zero review, I'm not booking it. And if there's three review, I'm not booking it. But if there's 200 review and they're all 5 stars, automatically you gain trust. I don't know the person, but I have the trust. It's exactly the same thing for subscription app. And we can't shy away from that, from showing, you know, the numbers, number of people, number of paywalls, sorry, number of reviews, actual reviews, and any third-party endorsement. You were published in a newspaper, put the newspaper name on there. You were app of the day, put it. Anything that creates trust should surface before your subscription experience and at the moment of the decision when you are about to take that.
I totally read the reviews on Airbnb before I rent the place. This is my guidance. I don't think I can tell you the same about reviews on Amazon, but this is the different story. For certain apps, reviews are so important. And I just give you the example of Amazon. You may not pay attention to this because it's a huge market. There's always, when it comes to big markets, there's always incentive to game the system, but in a good clear case, having social proof, having opinion of others expressed on the product, people who have been using your app up to this point will be your great point of making the case that people can trust you. Think about it this way. The only difference between brand and any other product or service is the trust. Brand is about trust. People are trusting your app because they know the quality is always there. The quality was there yesterday, today it will be tomorrow and year ahead. So if you're building the trust, it will be a part of building your own brand later on. Now we're gonna switch on not that pleasant point, which is churn, when people live in your app, for whatever reason. And let's talk about preventing the churn. What do you suggest to people, to app developers and marketers to stop mobile users churn?
Churn is much harder to control than initial conversion rate. So if you don't have a lot of people converting to payer, I wouldn't focus on churn just yet. I would focus on the initial. But once you have enough people that take on your subscription, you can start focusing on churn. The thing with churn though is that the best way to prevent it is by with your product. It's not necessarily with, you know, paywall or push notification or none of those tactics around a product. It's really the product itself. The better the experience, the better the value of the product, the less likely someone is to churn. But there's a few things you can build on top of it. We have, you know, promo offer, for example, that we can use to reactivate people. So one of some of the very good flow I've seen is when you ask people why they're churning, if it's to do with price, you can offer them a promo offer to reactivate them. If it's to do with push notification, maybe there's too many of them, you can actually you know, turn it off. If it's to do with them being worried that they will forget about subscription renewal, you can tell them, well, we will remind you. About 90% of the churn is usually to do with a product. I don't use a product enough, or the product has no value for me anymore. And this is way harder to control because it means spending a lot more time delivering the value, which might be also different for different people. And it's what we spend our entire time doing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think I would just add a small wrinkle here that there are people who will be leaving your app no matter what. It's completely natural. Life may change and they will not be having the need for your app anymore. It was nothing, something that is out of your control. That's totally normal. We're talking about the other bucket of people where actually, like you're saying, improving your app, making it more relevant, making it more useful will retain the people on board with you. But don't worry if you will be seeing a certain part of portion of your user base will going away. This is just life. every app has this certain portion of users who are going away because people are trying to save some money, they have too many subscriptions, they may prefer to watch Hulu and just cancel their Netflix subscription or vice versa. This is just life. But there are many occasions where your product can actually make people stay if they're not like if it's not one of the situations I've just described. Okay, finally, do you have any takeaways for my listeners? Something you would like them to live with once they're done listening to this episode?
Yes. If you think about it, a subscription app is a product like any other product. And so the first thing that we need to focus on is always bringing value. That is the first thing, is really understanding what people really need, what problem are we solving, and building a product that's delivering on that value. It doesn't need to be a complex product. It doesn't need to be big and have a lot of functionality, but it needs to work at doing the job that your people want to be done. And then once you have that, you can spend a lot of time working on how to communicate it properly and in the right place. And so that's what your onboarding flow is going to do, your paywall placement, the copy on the onboarding, the copy on the paywall, all of your CRM, everything around the core experience of the product. And this step is worth spending time on because you can really optimize your number and understand your audience a lot better by spending time on that. Only once you have the value. And once you've done those two things, then we can start looking at churn and longer term retention and, you know, what else is needed to keep people retained. But those are the first two steps that you can start with that will take a lot of time, but that will generate incredible results if they've done properly.
Gotcha. All right, Leah, we have just covered the topic on the table. And we're going to transition to the second part of the show, which is smaller, quicker. But this is my chance to ask a few quick questions to every guest on the show who comes for the first time. So I can tell a bit of a story about my guests to my listeners and they can know them better. Here we go. Question number one. What smartphone do you have now? Have you been switching between these two giants or staying one side, Android or iOS, all the time?
No, I've been iOS for years. I don't know which one I have. iPhone 12, maybe, or 13. Not sure.
Well, that's a good thing. You're not
Yeah.
concentrated on the model. The device make it for you regardless. Yeah, this is the right use of your smartphone. You'd have to remember this motto. As long as it's working for you, it's great. Do you remember your first mobile phone before, you know, the era of iPhone? Those phones with buttons you can put in your pocket. You remember any of those? What was your first one of that era?
I think it was a Nokia 35, 37 something. You know, the one you could play Snake on?
Yeah, I guess
Yeah.
in the and also the history, there's got to be a statue to this phone from that era because so many people remember Nokia 3310 with a snake. It's yeah,
Yes.
it's
Three
part
something.
through
That's
something.
3310. Yes, yeah, that's the one.
All right. Let's get back to present. So imagine you've left your phone at home for whatever reason. And you're out. What would be the most missing feature for you? What would be that feature you're missing out really badly?
The map.
Maps.
I'm not that good with directions.
Yeah, maps became the extension of our brains for sure, for all of us. Regardless, Apple Maps or Google Maps. Now, when you're looking at your phone, have you ever had this feeling, wouldn't be great if my phone has this or that feature? Probably not something entirely new, probably doing something better. And it could be anything, not necessarily like, you know, some trendy stuff, but anything that will make it better tool for you.
The search feature for me is terrible. I have a lot of apps on my phone. I don't know what most of them do. I the name don't really tell you that. I also don't really remember their names most of the time. And then I'm searching for something and it's just, it takes me forever to find it. And then if you do find it, it doesn't tell you where it is on your phone. So next time you're looking for it, you have to search again. You can't just know where it is. So yeah, the search functionality, I wish would be a lot better.
Got you. All right. Before I let you go, a very, very final question. How can people get in touch with you and get more information about what you do?
I'm on LinkedIn, Leah Samrani. I think there's only one of me, so you can find me there. And I'll also be at APS London on the 25th of April. If you're there, say hi.
Exactly. People, remember, there's only a couple of weeks away. So yeah, this is great. Thank you so much for coming on the show and spending time with us. Thank you, Leah.
Thank you.
And that was Leah Samrani, Product and Growth Consultant. To listen to more episodes, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts. Just search for Business of Apps and you will find us easily. Remember, we release episodes on Mondays. So subscribe and you will be getting this show on your smartphone, tablet, or computer as soon as we release its episodes. And please don't forget to leave us a review or comment on iTunes. It is highly appreciated. And all episodes will also be available on businessofapps.com. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Apps podcast. For more, head on over to businessofapps.com.